Court of Appeals. We have two cases on our 1:30 docket for oral submission, and then we have one case on our 3 o'clock docket for submission. So we will proceed through the first two cases. Your panel today is to my right, Justice Bob McCoy, to my left, Justice Lee Gabriel, and I'm Sue Walker. Our clerk will call the first case, and we will proceed.
The court will now call Adam Young versus Nortec Foundation Designs Incorporated. May it please the court. Ms. Betty L. Brown will argue for the appellant. Mr. C. D. Peoples will argue for the appellant.
Thank you.
May it please the court. As you're aware from reading our briefing in this case, this is a case that was brought under the Sabine Pilot exception to the at-will doctrine in Texas. I won't belabor the facts in this case, but there's a few things I would point out. That Adam Young worked for Nortec Foundation Design for nearly 10 years, and he was an excellent employee. The only reason that he was fired was because he refused to prepare a foundation design from a set of architect plans that had a stamp on it that said this is an illegal copy. That it said that if this plan is not in red, that it's an illegal set and you could be subject to a felony and also a fine of $100,000. That alerted him, so he refused to prepare the plan without the actual red set of the architect's copy. The crux of this case is, I believe, that Adam Young had a good faith belief that the plan was an illegal plan.
Really, counsel, wasn't even more than a good faith belief? I mean, it said it was an illegal plan if it didn't have the red stamp, correct?
That's correct. It said it was illegal, and he believed it was illegal. He had no reason at all to believe that the company had a legal set of the plan. He asked for a legal set of the plan over and over again. And crucial in the evidence in this case was a tape recording that he played when he was terminated. And Nortec asserts in his brief that he was given reasonable assurance that the plan was legal. And we assert that he was not given any reasonable assurance at all. The testimony was that he was never told that the builder, Will Steed, had a legal set of the plan. At most, during that recorded meeting, it was in evidence that his managers, Debbie Ingram and Seth Whitworth, stated, "But the thing is, Adam, I see where you're coming from, but if the owner has the red set," but they never assured him that it was the red set. Likewise, he asked about if he would be protected by the company if he used a plan. And during that same meeting, they said that they couldn't. They didn't know whether or not it was a copyright violation, and there wasn't anything that they could do. They wouldn't give him any assurance of protection. Seth Whitworth at most told him during that meeting that he thought the builder had the red set. But there was no effort to verify that information. And how it came up only after the lawsuit was filed. The argument now is that this is not an illegal act because they were able to obtain the red set copy of the plan after the lawsuit was filed. They made no attempt until the actual lawsuit was filed to verify to us that there was even a legal red set copy of the plan. But during the testimony, the owner of Nortec, Bob Lemke, was very adamant that they were not even going to try to get the original, that they were not going to set that precedent of getting the red step copy of the plan. There was also testimony that it was very uncommon for red stamp copies of the plans to come in. This day and age, most of the architects are doing online sending it via email and such, and so that it was unusual to see a red set. But here, in fact, there was a copy of a plan that said, if it's not a red set, it's illegal.
How did someone else possessing a red set make it legal? I mean, he had a piece of paper that said, you cannot use this piece of paper because it's not red.
Right.
So how does somebody else having a red set somewhere off in the ozone make using this one legal?
They assert that because they could get it, that made it legal. We assert that the only information that he had at the time of his termination was that it was an illegal set of the plan. But the assertion by the defendants in this case are that it's not an illegal act because they were able to get the red set. They obtained it, even though they hadn't obtained it while he was still working there.
Was that question delved into, that you can use a black copy of a red and that makes it okay?
That was not, it was never told that. He was told that he was required to use the black copy. And his position was that he was afraid. He was afraid of a felony. He was afraid that it was going to, if he had a felony, he couldn't get a job in the future. He was in college. I mean, he had a very clear belief that he was being asked to do something illegal. Even the trial judge noted in this case that he had a good faith belief that it was an illegal set of the plan.
I guess the focus of my question is, the thrust of their argument is that it was not an illegal act. And so my question was, did anybody look into the fact, is it an illegal act to use a black set if there is another red set out there in the ozone, or do you actually have to have the red set before you can use it?
There's no authority that we could find on that, and that question was never delved into at trial, and he was not given an assurance that using the black set was illegal. It was undisputed at trial that an architect's plan is a copyrighted work. There was testimony every architect's plan is copyrighted work, and pursuant to 17 USCA 506, it's a criminal offense under federal law for willful copyright infringement. And under 17 USCA 506-1A, it provides that copyright infringement is willful if the infringement was committed for purposes of commercial advantage or private gain. Now, defendants argue that they weren't using that set for private gain, that they weren't going out and making copies of it and building all kinds of houses using that plan. But they were using it to prepare this set of foundation plans, and it was for financial gain. They were going to make money off of preparing this set of house plans, which is what they did. So I assert that they're under the Sabine Pilot exception, that there was a criminal violation there if he used the black set, saying it was illegal. If they'd had the red set there at the time, then there would be no problem, because that would be the legal copy of that.
Cortex's brief, they say, and they cite to a couple of places in the record and an exhibit that says, prior to termination, Young was told that Combs had a red stamped copy of the plans and that Steed had in his possession a red stamped copy of the architectural plans. Young refused to take Will Steed's word for the fact. They say that evidence was there. You're saying it wasn't?
I'm saying it's disputed evidence. Mr. Young testified that he was never told that. The most he was ever told was that they thought that Will Steed had it. Even the builder, Will Steed, testified that he didn't have a red set copy of the plan. When he went to look for it, once the lawsuit was filed, he determined he didn't even have a copy of it. He thought maybe he'd given it to one of his contractors, and he had to call the homeowner to get it. He said for him it wasn't a problem to go to the homeowner and get it, but he didn't even have a copy of it. And then the tape that was in evidence, there was nothing on that tape, and that was the only meeting that Mr. Young had with his supervisors, and during that meeting, they never told him that the builder had a copy of it. And that was a pretty long meeting, and it was a lengthy tape, and the jury heard every bit of that. And at most, they said, if the builder has the red set copy. They didn't say the builder has it, because no one had attempted to get it. So when they say that the builder had it, or there was testimony, it was disputed testimony, because Adam Young said that he was never told that the builder had a red set copy of it. And in fact, the builder didn't have the red set copy of it. He testified to that.
It was the homeowner had it.
There's several cases. There's cases that actually I believe that should be looked at in deciding this case, and one of those is the Texas Supreme Court of Winters v. Houston Chronicle Publishing. In that case, the court said in Winters didn't fall within the Sabine Pilot exception because he was not unacceptably forced to choose between risking criminal liability or being discharged from his livelihood. And they use that word, and it's used in several other Supreme Court cases and Court of Appeals cases, risking criminal liability. And I believe that this gives guidance to the court on this matter. Adam Young was exactly put in that position. He was forced to risk criminal liability or forced to lose his job. They told him if he didn't do the plan, he was going to be fired. He didn't do the plan, and he was fired. And he was put in he was definitely put in a position of risking criminal liability because the plan said it was illegal. And therefore, I think under the Supreme Court case of Winters v. Houston, that because he was put in the position of risking criminal liability, that they should be held liable in this case. In addition, there's other cases that use a reasonable belief language. In Singular Wireless versus Lee, the Court of Appeals stated, a plaintiff desiring to establish the burden, the Sabine Pilot exception has a burden to prove that his discharge was for the sole reason that he refused to perform an illegal act that he reasonably believed would subject him to criminal penalties. And in that case, they cited the Sabine Pilot case. And the Sabine Pilot, quite frankly, is designed to protect employees under this very circumstance. Not all of the facts will fit perfect in these cases. The fact that they were able to obtain the red stamp copy later is the red herring that they're trying to throw at us in this case. But the fact is, the stamp said it was illegal, and under Sabine Pilot, he reasonably believed that it would subject him to criminal liabilities. In addition, the defendant argues that this is not an expansion of Sabine Pilot, or they argue that we have to expand Sabine Pilot in this case. And because I've cited and relied heavily with the trial court on the holding in Johnston v. Del Mar out of Corpus Christi. And again, that case was different than this case. In that case, the employee, the Del Mar case held that that because he was inquiring into whether or not it was a criminal act, that he could be held liable under Sabine Pilot. We have never made that allegation in this case. It wasn't, we've not pled that, we're not alleging that in this case. The Sabine Pilot, the issue in Del Mar that we looked at was they stated that it is implicit that in order to refuse to do an illegal act, the employee must either know or suspect that it's illegal. Well, certainly he had reason to even believe it was illegal because it said it. And it said that in Del Mar, the question is not whether the act, in fact, is illegal. It's irrelevant to that determination. And here, even though it may have not been illegal at the time, it may have not been illegal after the fact because they obtained the red stamp copy, all he had to go on at the time was that it was an illegal copy of the plan. And the Sabine Pilot, the court has says it comes into play when he's forced to choose between risking criminal liability or being discharged. And certainly, in his mind, this was a big risk, and he testified at length about that. The public policy exception was designed to protect employees from this very thing, and to hold otherwise is a chilling effect on Sabine Pilot. The case that this Court of Appeals held actually looked at in this case under, I'm sorry, Morales v. Simulite Training. In that case, no illegal act had actually occurred. In that case, the employer asked him to sign a blank note, which he anticipated would be falsified, and he refused to do it. And the court said that was sufficient under Sabine Pilot to get them past summary judgment in that case. And I assert that it's the same thing here. Even though there's nothing in Sabine Pilot or any of the subsequent cases that say that an illegal act actually has to be performed, all it requires is that there is an illegal act that carries criminal penalties. And in this case, there was the illegal act. It did carry criminal penalties. A jury found in favor of Mr. Young and actually awarded him damages in the sum of $303,000. And we're asking that jury verdict be reinstated because the jury verdict correctly found in that case that he was fired for refusing to commit an illegal act. Thank you.
Y'all brought up a couple of issues that I'd like to address. It's the one question is, well, the stamp said it's illegal, so doesn't that make the plan set illegal? And how does the fact that we later obtained a red stamped copy, how does that make it legal? And I'll tell you that Nortex went to great pains during the trial to establish that the use that Ms. Combs and Will Steed were putting these plans to were a legal use of the plans. Now, Young has, throughout this litigation, and even here today, kind of backed off the idea that using the Black's Headed plan itself is an illegal act. And they focused to a great degree on whether or not there's a good faith belief that what he was being asked to do was illegal. And the reason they've done that is throughout the litigation, they've said, hey, listen, if they have a red stamp copy of the plans, then the game's over. And there hasn't been any briefing by anyone as to what is acceptable use of the plans. Because, frankly, they've never brought it up. But we went to great pains to show that under copyright law, we believe that what Mr. Young was being asked to do
so
was completely illegal.
So you're saying that the stamp is erroneous?
Absolutely, Judge. I don't think that stamp determines when something is a copyrighted material or not. What matters in copyright law is who has a right to the work. And in this instance, Ms. Combs purchased those plans from the architect for some number of dollars. I think it was $300.
Well, who provided the black stamped copy plan to Mr. Young?
The builder.
So Nortex? That the builder provided it to Nortex and Nortex provided it to Mr. Young?
That's correct.
Okay, so how would Mr. Young know that the stamp was basically erroneous?
He wouldn't.
So how then would he not have a good faith belief that the stamp saying that it was a criminal penalty to use that plan if it didn't have the red stamp on it and that it was a copyright infringement, how would he know that that wasn't true?
That's what he's arguing, that he had a good faith belief that what he was being asked to do is illegal. But a good faith belief is different from actually being illegal. And in this case, what he was being asked to do was not illegal. It's like if you have someone who's at the switch who when he believes he flips that switch that polluted water is going to go into a waterway. He believes in his heart of hearts that that's what's going to happen. But when in reality, that's just water. Then if he says, listen, I'm not flipping that switch, he was never asked to do anything illegal. And I want to get kind of...
So you're just supposed to take on the risk not knowing any better. You're just supposed to take it on because after the fact, somebody's going to tell you that you were right in doing it?
Well, that's what this case is all about. And that's the tough nut for y'all to crack. And that's what NorTex says is best left to the Texas Supreme Court to decide. When the Texas Supreme Court said we want to enact Sabine, it says we're creating a very narrow exception. And it has not expanded on that exception. It's had an opportunity to do it private whistleblower.
Why would it need to be expanded? Doesn't this fall exactly within the parameters of it?
No, ma'am. He wasn't asked to do anything illegal. The bundle of rights that Ms. Combs purchased when she purchased the plan included.
But he was never told that.
Doesn't matter. The question is whether or not he was asked to do anything illegal. He wasn't asked to do anything illegal. She had the rights to that work. She sat down with Will Steed and made a few changes to the plan and said, this is the house I want. That's within her rights.
Under your interpretation of Sabine, the employee is required to take on all the risk, not knowing and believing that what they're doing is illegal, and hope that after the fact you can prove that it's not after he's been discharged.
That is what we say the law in Texas is. Now, I gather from the way you said that you're inclined to go with the Johnston Del Mar analysis, which says that an employee should not be terminated when he is making a good faith inquiry into whether or not what he's asked to be done is illegal. In that case, this person was told to put a semi-automatic firearm in a box, label it fishing gear, and ship it. So she called the Bureau of Tobacco and Firearms to inquire as to whether or not that was okay, and she was terminated.
There's a difference between that and this. She was terminated for making the inquiry. He wasn't terminated for making the inquiry. He was terminating for failing to do his job and do the plans.
Thank you. And that's exactly what we're arguing. We're arguing that he wasn't fired for making the inquiry. He made the inquiry. And the very day that he made the inquiry, Seth Whitworth got on the phone with Will Steed and said, Will, do you have a red stamp copy of these plans? Yes, I do. Okay, thank you. And that was Will Steed's testimony that he had the plan at the time. Now, later...
But does he say he communicated it?
Yes.
So that's just a fact question.
Yes, and I believe he has a specific recollection of this, and it's in the record that he recalls very soon after the plans were given to NorTex that he got a call from a NorTex employee asking about the plan and whether he had a red stamp copy, and he said he did. Now, later, after that phone call, he gave that red set to another contractor to do the work, whatever field it was in. And so when I called and said, hey, listen, we need a red stamp copy of the plan, that's when he went to Ms. Combs and got the red stamp copy of the plan. But
I thought it was given to a contractor, not Ms. Combs.
There were several red stamp copies. She had like three or four of them that she had put in her, and she gave one of them to him, and she'd kept one, and so she may have another one at home now. I don't know. I want to talk about because I really don't believe he was asked to do anything illegal. I think what we really need to decide is whether or not we're going to allow an employee who has a good faith belief that what he's being asked to be done is illegal is a place where we want to go in this jurisprudence. First of all.
But to me, the distinguishing feature between the good faith belief cases and this case is that it was printed on the material. Even though you contend that the stamp was erroneous, there was a stamp on the material that said using these constitutes a crime. It's a federal offense and a violation of copyright laws, and provided the actual section of the code that it violated. So to me, it's not just a good faith belief. I mean, it's a fact. I mean, it's stating that it is, it's the stamp itself is stating that it's a criminal penalty. So it's not where the person is using their own judgment saying, oh, well, perhaps this is not good to put a, perhaps this is a penal code violation to put this handgun in a box and seal it up and label it as fishing tackle. It's an actual statement that it constitutes an offense on the material itself. And to me, maybe erroneously to me, but to me there is a distinction between that and an employee using their own discretion to try to figure out if maybe this is a penal offense or maybe this is something that they shouldn't be doing. And in that case, they might be able to form a good faith belief that it's an offense. But when you have something you're confronted with that says this is an offense, that to me seems to be a distinction.
I understand that, but I would argue that the stamp can be wrong. The stamp was wrong. And under these circumstances, Ms. Combs had an absolute right to give those plans to her architect, to have the to her builder, to have these plans made.
The stamp itself wasn't necessarily wrong, was it? Because hypothetically, maybe she didn't buy the plans, and maybe that was somehow or another she had obtained only the black stamped plans, and she didn't have the red stamped plans. Then the black stamp would have been correct. It wouldn't have been erroneous. Isn't that true?
But fortunately, we know now, as the judge knew at the time, that we have the red stamp. She purchased the plans. That's all the testimony there is that she had a right to do what she wanted to with these plans. She was exercising that right.
The problem with that is it's an after the fact legality. It's illegal until after the fact it becomes legal. So it's like an after the fact legality, making something that was illegal all the way up, okay, now it's legal. And so from the employee's perspective, you know, that how they're caught in a trap, they're in a catch 22.
And as the Rankin court pointed out, that if we allow employee, and now we've got a public policy issue, are we going to allow employees who have a good faith belief that what they're being asked to do is illegal? Where is it going to stop? Would it have been enough if Nortex would have hired a lawyer to perform an analysis and come to the conclusion that under these circumstances it wouldn't be a copyright violation? The Rankin court says, well, what if the employee says, I'm not buying what your lawyers are telling me. I want my own lawyer to look at it. There are other public policy considerations that we have here that, while I appreciate that there's a concern because the stamp was staring him in the face, the bottom line is what the exception that we're creating is going to make it so that any employee can, if he has a good faith belief that he may be being asked to do something wrong, can be insubordinate and can say, oh, I'm really concerned about this. I may be breaking the law. I'm not going to do it. And I just think that that's a dangerous precedent. The San Antonio court has looked at it and doesn't like it. The Austin court has looked at it and doesn't like it. Del Mar is not necessarily a favored decision. And while I appreciate that what gives everyone in this courtroom heartburn about it is the fact that there was a stamp here, the bottom line is all that matters is whether or not he was really being asked to do something illegal.
Well, he was being asked to do something illegal until after the fact it became legal.
No, it was never illegal. And the reason it wasn't illegal is because she had the rights to the plan the whole time. While all of this was going on, everything he was being asked to do was legal.
Well, let's go the other way on public policy. I can see where you could set somebody up to have them fired. Let's ask somebody to do something that appears to be illegal. Then when they don't do it, then we'll fire them. then we'll show him, oh, it was legal after all, so you're gone. That's the flip side of your argument about public policy. I assume there was no estoppel or clean hands. I mean, that's the first thing I'd have thought of here. Here's I'm telling you to do this that says on it's illegal, that you're not, you shouldn't be stopped from coming back later and saying that it is legal, or that you approached it with unclean hands because you're the one. He didn't come up with this out of a dream. Y'all supplied him with a document that said that it was illegal, and then, not unsurprisingly, he reacts to it and says, I can't do this. The document you gave me for the work performed says it's illegal. Oh, well, we were wrong. It really is legal. But there was no estoppel or unclean hands, I guess. So.
And Judge, you know, it's because we're able to banter back and forth on what is good public policy and bad public policy. That's the exact reason why we should have a strict holding in Sabine Pilot. And if we need a change to a good faith belief, then let's let the Texas Supreme Court do it, or the legislature. I mean, the Texas Supreme Court has consistently said, we're not going to allow a private whistleblower cause of action. That's up for the that's for the legislature to decide. And courts of appeals have consistently said, we're not going to expand at-will exceptions to at-will past Sabine Pilot. That's for the Texas Supreme Court to decide. We ask that you do that also.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peebles. Rebuttal?
Thank you. I agree that the reasoning that you're looking at is absolutely correct. At the time of the act, he was being asked to do something illegal. The plan said it was illegal. That's all he had to go in.
But he wasn't being asked to do something illegal. He's being asked to do something that appeared on its face to be legal.
That's illegal. That's absolutely correct. It said this is an illegal plan. Now, Seth Whitworth did testify that he did call the home builder, but Adam Young testified he was never told that. In the actual tape recording, the office manager stated that they did not know whether the plan was legal or stolen or whether it was a copyright violation. He asked that, and they said they didn't know. And so he had nothing else to go on other than the fact that it said it's an illegal copy of the plan. And I absolutely agree. You then can't, after the fact, make it legal. They could have done it at the time. The home builder said it wasn't that hard to get the plan. They could have called. He asked them. He said, I'll do the plan. You can send your courier out there, get the plan, go get it from the builder, and bring it back here, and I'll do it. It's only going to take me 30 minutes to do this plan. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. They only did it after the lawsuit was filed, after he was fired, a good employee for 10 years. And another employee was also fired. I mean, not fired, another employee also testified that he refused to do the same plan. Adam Davidson was given the plan first. He was another drafter, just like Mr. Young. He was given the plan, and he said, no, I'm not going to do it because of the stamp on there. And then it may have been that Seth Whitworth told Adam Davidson, we don't know, but he never told Adam Young that he thought the builder had a legal set of the plan. So Adam Young never was given any reassurance that it was a legal copy. So right smack within the confines of Sabine Pilot, he was only given the opportunity to risk criminal liability or risk his job. And he, with those two choices, he wasn't willing to risk criminal liability. He had too much to depend on. And
tell us what you're asking for.
We're asking for the jury verdict to be reinstated in this case. The jury correctly held that Adam Young, they answered jury question number one, that Adam Young was terminated for refusing to commit an illegal act.
Can you comment on their request for, under certain circumstances, a reverse and remand for a new trial? Because there was no issue submitted concerning the good faith exception.
There was an issue submitted as to whether he had a good faith belief After the case went to the jury, and that was stated in my brief, that we asked that a jury instruction be submitted that Adam Young had a good faith belief that the plan was illegal, and that jury instruction was denied. But I believe that this case falls squarely within Sabine Pilot, and that the jury correctly answered the jury question, because at the time, at the fact, Justice Walker correctly stated, I think, it was illegal on its face at the time. It said it was an illegal plan until the red stamp copy came up. And that plan that said it was illegal was provided to him by his employer. Therefore, I don't think that there needs to be a reverse and a new jury question. I believe that the question in Sabine Pilot, it says what the jury question needs to be. That was the exact jury question that was presented. I did ask for the additional instruction on good faith belief, and that was denied. So if there was any error at all, it was in denying that instruction. But nevertheless, I don't believe that that would cause it to be reversed and rendered. I believe that the jury verdict should be reinstated in this case.
I'm just curious about something, and you may or may not know the answer, but it appears as though the trial court had denied two motions for summary judgment and a directed verdict, and then turned around and granted the JNOV. Was there any explanation as to why the about face?
The trial court struggled with these issues throughout, because these issues were raised at every stage in both summary judgments and in the motion for directed verdict. The trial judge ultimately, in denying the directed verdict, said that she was going to let it go to the jury. And she said she did indeed struggle with this, that after contemplating it and reading the cases, she had decided to reverse. But I think it was a close call in Judge Wilkinson's mind, or otherwise she wouldn't have let it go past all the way to the jury, past two summary judgments and a directed verdict, in that it was a struggle. But I believe that the struggle should be tipped the other way, that this the jury found correctly that this does fall within the Sabine Pilot. It did say it was an illegal plan, and he had no reason to believe it was not illegal at the time that he was terminated. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Thank you, Mr. Peebles. We appreciate you appearing here today, and thank you for your arguments. They've been very helpful to the court on this issue. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business.